Good morning, good morning, good morning. You are live on the Wise Words with One Gone Show for another episode of What's Going On Wednesday. What's Going On Wednesday is brought to you by Hooked on Fishing, Not on Violence, the Men's Healing Circle, and a few others. We'll get back to you in a few minutes, but right now we're going live with our main man, our host with the most, Marvell Wilson. Marvell!
Good morning, Tim, and good morning to our listening audience. Once again, we certainly appreciate you guys continuing to support, because as we continue to listen to each other and share with each other, we're going to find the remedies to the challenges that face us, and we're going to do it together. So thank you.
Brother Mark.
Yes, sir. Grand Rising. He can bless us to all.
Yes, sir. So what's going on Wednesday is what's going on. And so we know in the world right now there's a lot going on in the world. We ain't going to talk about Israel shooting over in Gaza. We ain't going to talk about the Ukraine's asking for more money. We ain't going to talk about everything across the water. We going to talk about what's happening right where we at, because we got enough going on right where we at that it's just appalling, right? And so why I say that is we have another two or three murders here in Sacramento. One I didn't even know about until one of my partners say, "Man, did you know such and such son died?" I said, "No, I didn't." And so one of my coworkers called me and they said they had a vigil for the youth. And I wasn't able to make it, right? I wasn't able to make it, but I'm going to post it on my page today to share with the world on how we are knocking down one another. And we're worried about other information and other situations around the world when right here in our own backyard, we have a war. It's a street war out there. These kids, most of them, they get locked up and they get a beef inside the juvenile hall. Somebody got a little clicking in the background. Most of these kids, they start trouble in the juvenile hall system and they bring it to the streets. And when they get to the streets, it's easy access for a gun. What was meant for a joke ends up into a tragic death, right? And so that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with gunplay. And if we don't talk about gunplay some of the times that we're on here, then we'll be missing a big part of what's going on in our neighborhood. I just told you guys about the 10-year-old. Now, I find out, you know, I'm doing my research out there in the field, talking to loved ones yesterday, and found out that this young boy killed that boy because it was a bicycle race, and one lost and one got into oneself, and that is selfish to do something selfless as to kill another 10-year-old because of a bike race. Wow. What says the panel?
You know, that's kind of sad, Tim. You know, go ahead, Marvin.
Go ahead.
You know, that's kind of sad. That's kind of sad when we have 10-year-olds taking another life like that. You know, his life, both lives just begun. So now two families have lost a son. One died, and all right, y'all have a good day. One died, and the other one is going, you know, the juvenile. And then from there, who knows where. But his life is basically ended. And, you know, I hold the adults responsible, because whoever owned that gun should have had the common sense enough to lock it up and put it away. Not only do you lock it up, but you put it somewhere out of sight, out of mind. Because if a kid knows that they got something like that, they're going to be apt to grab it as soon as anger arises. And they're not knowing the full justification of what they did. They don't know what all is going to happen to them in the long run. And pretty much their kid's going to get in locked up, and he's going to get around some other kids and learn how to do something worse when he do get out. But it's just a sad thing. And, you know, like I say, when you say what's happening in our society today, it's these careless adults are so-called. They're not really adults because they still boys or girls in the mind. They're teaching these kids how to do the wrong thing. You know, oh, you can make some easy money. But these kids are not knowing that they could end their life that way. And I'm going to pass the hat.
I have attempted to drive the appearance to me of what is like seemingly the core to a lot of our behaviors to each other and toward ourselves, the lack of recognition of value. And I contend that the games where they're practicing taking lives. I mean, let's be honest. Some of the games they play, I remember they had one about, it was popular about maybe 7, 8, 10 years ago called Grand Theft Auto. And I used to hear people playing and I hear people talk about it, but I don't play games. You know, well, not like that. I mean, I might indulge in a card game or something like that where you use your wits and count and all that. But these games are designed now to simulate the taking of lives. The Grand Theft Auto, when I finally got a chance to look at it, I was astonished. You got a guy riding down the street. He picks up a so-called prostitute. He gives her the money. She performs an act. Then he robs her, takes it back, and then he might shoot her. Or he might be on a getaway and somebody try to stop him. I mean, it was just, wow, man, gangland, like mindlessness and carnage everywhere. And people say that, oh, it's just a game. But look how seriously we take football. That's just a game. But we got people that's like devoted to football. Same with basketball. It's just a game. But look at the energy that we appoint to it and make sure that we're a part of it and it's a part of us. So I say that the dehumanization factor has always been the main reason why someone feels okay about hurting, denouncing, or taking the life of another is because they've been dehumanized. And our dehumanization has trickled long since has trickled into an obvious thought process from one to another. Our expendability and our lack of value has demonstrated itself in so many ways that how we treat each other, how we look at each other, how we cross each other out, how we minimize each other, how we criticize each other. And I'm saying that the well-oiled system that was placed to create this is on automatic pilot now, where no one really has to say much to trigger our lack of respect for each other. So the value, that's why I keep on pushing the value. I keep on telling the truth about what we have done since we've been here, despite all of the things that were placed against us for us to overcome. We still thrive, yet our thriving is controlled because seemingly we're mentally locked in. Like until I saw a story about an elephant that was tethered to a stake, and the elephant got used to being tethered to the stake. And when the rope broke, the elephant didn't venture too far away from the stake, even though they were free. The elephant still was conditioned to stay within the distance of the stake with the rope around him. So it was like the rope wasn't there, but psychologically it was. So the value of this wonderful, beautiful, creative, wholesome, spiritual people is not being revived. And so we become expendable to each other. Ashe.
Ashe.
I agree with you on that one. Because that is a big problem, the value. We don't hold our own lives of value, so we devalue someone else's life. You know, and that's what I always reflect back upon, how we could do something today and don't realize how severe it is until after the fact. Till after the fact something happens to someone else, or we put ourselves in a predicament to where we have to think about it. Then we sit up and we think, oh, wow, I caused that problem. If men and women would only think about the repercussions of their actions. Because, you know, just like you were saying, I had friends that watch a football game, and, man, if their team loses, oh, they're upset, and they will fight. I let a friend and his team travel out of town to another city here in California to a game, and his team loses, he'll leave the guys that roll with him. If they're not a fan of his team, he will leave them. Oh, no, I'm serious. He would leave them.
Mercy.
So, you know, we have to think, man, is it really that serious? Is it that serious that we will do something senseless and cause someone else's life to be in danger or our own to be in danger? Because we don't think about that. And that's what I try to tell these guys that's out here selling drugs, selling guns. You might be selling a kid a gun that's looking to kill you because you forgot about something you did in your past. So that's why I say, you know, we have to think about a lot of things. A lot of people say, oh, man, I got shot, man, but it wasn't meant for me. You sure? Think about what you did in the past. You may have done something to that kid's family member or something. You know, so and like I said, it's a lot. It's a thought process, period. And back to them abilities. We got to be dependable, reliable, and accountable for our actions. And I like I said, it's really upsetting me. I'm literally getting upset about this mess, man. But I'm going to digress and pass it on back.
Man, let me say this, man. Whenever it comes to youth getting killed or youth killing, it sets me back, man. It sets me back. It sets me back because I know they don't know better. That's why it sets me back. I know they don't know better. They want to be tough because they want to be liked. We had a youngster like Marvell has mentioned many times, a 12-year-old in the class said, I'm going to get me a gun, and therefore I'm going to get some respect around here. And if I get a body, they really got to respect me. Now, when they start thinking like that, ladies and gentlemen, at the age of 12, somewhere down the line, we have dropped the ball. We, the community, his family, his parents, grandparents, uncles, aunties, we have dropped the ball. They say it takes a village to raise one, right? And so if that's the case, boy, the village don't look good. The village that I'm in don't look good when we can't even get a message to a 12-year-old. We talking about all this high power stuff, but we can't talk to a 12-year-old? Let me just say this, man. Last night we had a graduation for mental health at Hooked on Fishing, Not on Violence in the Sojourner Truth Museum. We had about five or six parents finally come in on a rainy night to sit down and see what their young folks was getting and what lessons were being taught. And so I had to stop and thank these parents for coming in and sitting in to see what their kids are being taught. Because most of the time they drop them off at the front door, they start their car, and you don't see them for an hour and a half, not knowing who's in there teaching and what's being taught. So I think we done got laid back. I think we have got our morals mixed up, and our understanding is more confusion than understanding. Because ain't no way I'm going to drop mine on my son when we drop him off at the football. My wife going to be there, or I'm going to be there. When he go to practice, I go right by there. I might not stay all day, but I'm going to let him know that somebody care and support this young man. So I'm going to pull up, even if I pull off. My son know I'm going to pull up. I'm going to look. I'm going to say the coach going to see me, and then I'm going to push off. But they're going to see me, and they're going to speak to me, and I'm going to stay if I ain't got nothing else to do. What I'm trying to say, America, is that we can't change nothing until we change our mindset. We can't change no law, no legislation, no rules, no regulations. We can't change none of that till we change our mindset. And once we change our mindset, we need to go inside our own homes. Because I've been hearing all the time that it takes a village, and it starts at the home, and all that sound good. They've been saying that for years. I hear something in the background. Somebody got some pounding or something in the background. I don't know what a dripping water faucet. I don't know what it is, but it's kind of disturbing. Anyway, I'm mad right now, and I don't get mad too easy. I know how to let things get by me, right? But when young kids is dying every day, every other day, and we ain't got that on the news, and we ain't got that, we ain't marching the streets, we ain't doing nothing when Pookie shoot Ray Ray. We ain't doing nothing. I'm going to go because I still hear that bing, whatever it is, and this is distraction. All right, I'm done.
I don't hear it. I'm sure it's not coming from me. And I can tell that's a rarity. Yeah, it's a rarity for my brother to be off put to this degree. And I understand his angst and the frustration, because we deal with parents, we deal with the children, we deal with the schools, and we're seeing the deficiencies. It's just that the deficiencies lie with adults more than the children. So we're attempting to penetrate that barrier that exists with the children to the parents, us to the children and to the parents. Because when we teach the children something, they go into an environment that maybe contradicts what we're teaching them. So not being able to have the parents hands-on or in proximity to what we're doing makes it very challenging to get the message well-planted and get the message practiced by everyone involved. So I understand the frustration. I have two things that came to me when we were talking about what we do impulsively. We have in the men's healing circle, we have testimonies from at least, and I'm not exaggerating, we have testimonies from at least five men who say this: a decision that they made in 30 seconds cost them 129 years, 130 years, 132 years, 134 years, and so on, of their life for a decision that they made in 30 seconds. So what that says to me is that emotionally they were unstable to me, because anger, again, they graduated, what they graduated from yesterday, I wasn't there, but I'm aware what it was. They graduated from an anger management class. And that's a very pointed area for us to practice and emphasize dealing with is anger, because I'm going to tell you what I've observed, even with myself, is I'll do something through the impulse of anger, unthinking, just reactionary. And then I start doing my best thinking afterwards, trying to cover it up or trying to slither up out of the responsibility or accountability for idea. I become an Einstein. I come up with all kinds of slick lies and scenarios to make it look like I didn't do what I did or that somebody else did it. That's the syndrome. And see, I'm going deep when I say that it may be easy now for one to allow themselves to be reactionary and act out on anger and act out on an impulse and do something, because maybe they like being stimulated to their best thinking, and that act of anger or the whatever they demonstrated through anger creates that. So now they're doing their best thinking. It's almost like when I was using drugs, I didn't like how I felt, so I'd use a drug, and it made me to a high degree get where I wanted to feel, right? So this could be strangely a stimuli for people to start doing their best thinking, you know, and illuminating their brain after the fact. That's just a theory, but I'm saying that we have to shake down every prospect of why it is that impulsively or even premeditatively we can contemplate taking each other's lives. What does someone have to do for you to feel justified to take their life, their whole life? What can somebody do that justifies that? And my response is, not much. If the person that's delivering the death blow considers himself already dead, mentally, emotionally, or spiritually, or all three.
Well, once again, I'm going to have to agree with you, my brother. It's a lot that we have to take into consideration. And, you know, it's just like, you know, we always say, you know, when kids come in, we apologize for our mistakes, for our lack of being there, for our lack of being present in the lives of these youth, for our lack of speaking out and up to these youth out here. Like I always say, for every situation that goes on, there was an adult or someone older that heard or seen what this person was going through before they committed that violent act or that act of stupidity. Somebody heard it. Somebody could have stopped it. And after the fact, they said, oh, well, I could have stopped that. I seen him just before he did that. If only I'd have spoke to him. See, we got to come away from that. If only I had. We got to make it a point to speak to these youngsters. When we see them, say hello. You know, smile at them. That one smile might cause them to change their thought patterns. You know, it might just cool down that temperament that they have. It might just make them, you know, just stop and think about it. Wow, that person really cared about me. He cared enough to speak to me. A lot of these youths don't get that. They don't get it at home. They don't get it in the neighborhood. They don't get it in the streets. They feel nobody don't care, so they don't care. And I'm speaking like that because I got love at home, but in the streets I didn't get much love, not after I moved to California. I mean, it was a whole altogether different story out here. Now in Oklahoma, everybody spoke. But out here, man, walk down the street, you can see a person three or four times a day, and they will not say nothing, not one word. So, you know, we got to speak up. We got to speak out. And we got to let these youth to know, these other rascals out here know that we care. And it's not that you care about them. You care about your own family. Because when that guy walks past you, you don't know whether he's going to your house, your neighbor's house, your cousin's house, or where he's going. So we got to speak up and speak out, man. And we got to let it be known. And as you were saying about the marching and stuff, Tim, I think it's time we get back out here and start doing this, how we stood, how you guys stood on the corners. We got to start doing that more often, you know, at least once a month or something, because we got to change some things, man. And I'm proposing that this summer, instead of us meeting in the room, we meet out here on the streets. We pick a different corner or area of town and have our healing circle out on the streets.
Not only that, Mark, from this year, I'm going to be, so Tuesday nights, I know that's our youth healing circle, but Tuesday night is the council meeting as well. I'm going to start going back to the council meeting because I had a lot of things going with that. It's time for us to get in front of that microphone and come as a one, put on them men's healing circle shirts. Go sit up in that city hall and demand some things to happen, and demand that us black men be lifted up and encouraged, inspired, let us do the work that need to be done in our neighborhoods. We need to go and speak out to the city council, get their backing on moving forward, man. That's what we should do. Reason I don't do that is because whenever we involve other entities, the first thing somebody said, just like they said not too long ago, oh, they're getting paid for that. Well, if I am getting paid for it, I'm doing the work to get paid for it. And I don't worry about it. You're not giving it to me. I got to make the move to go get it, right? And then somebody said, well, y'all taking signatures and all this. I know a whole bunch of organizations taking signatures. They ain't doing nothing with it. I know a whole bunch of BBOA still taking signatures, ain't they? Do you go in and sign up there?
Yeah.
I'm just asking. It's a whole bunch of them that ain't getting paid, or if they is, they doing what they need to do what they doing. Don't knock a man because he found a way to get himself something. If he offer it to you, come on in and join forces. What happens is, somebody trying to watch somebody else's pocket and the work ain't never getting done. That's why I'm one gone, not two gone. That's why I'm one gone, not two gone, three gone, or four gone. It's one gone. And I'm going to do it one gone way. God saved me to help save somebody else. And I ain't going to let woman, child, boy, girl, or nothing stop the momentum that God given me. I could go lay down just like anybody else and say, oh, that's their problem. I ain't got no time. I'm going to do me. We got to get out of that, man. We got to get out of that. People look to destroy good people. They look to do that. They wait to do that. And I'm sick of it. That's why I said the men in the circle ain't going to be nothing to do with getting no money, unless we come up with a forum to do so. And everybody's chipped in. Everybody know what we're doing. Everybody has put their yays in, and we move forward like that. Other than that, two or three trying to do it, and we got a whole bunch of brothers behind us, it always gets messy. So whenever we move together, we need to move together from start to finish. We can't leave people out no more. But you can't want people to do all the work. You sit back, and then when rewards come, you the first hand out. But you ain't did nothing but just sit. We got to get out of that, brothers. We got to lift each other, encourage each other, inspire each other to be the best we can be. And that's that. And it sounds simple, but damn it, it ain't happening. And I'm sitting at the table. A lot of people say, well, we ain't sitting at the table. When you get to the table, you don't even know how to order off the menu. Oops, I'm going to let that go because my mic is on and I'm going to pass it.
Well, what do you mean your mic is on? Yeah, your mic is on, and your passion is being expressed and felt so that those who are listening could feel the intention of what we do here. Because, look, what the question usually is, well, the question that quite frankly I heard posed to me, or the assumption that was posed to me, that the Healing Circle is a paid arrangement. It came through me and it got shaken down to find out that it's not true. Yet it's clear to me that when one makes those kinds of assertions, they're suggesting that you're not sincere. You're just doing it for the money. That's what I get when somebody say, well, y'all see y'all taking signatures, so y'all must be getting paid. So if you're getting paid, that's the only reason why you're doing it. And that's one of the things that is certainly addressable in the mindsets of blacks to other blacks, because that is kind of like the origin, to me, one of the origins of what we might call black-on-black crime. Where we convict each other because we challenge the sincerity and the passion and the intention of each other. But we think that, see, the indoctrination is not just being division and subcategorization. Like, for instance, when I was a kid, I was a light-skinned kid. I used to catch hell. And I didn't recognize it until another light-skinned dude say, man, did you used to go through this? Yeah. Did you go through that? Yeah. Then he said, you know why? I said, why? He said, because you light-skinned. And I said, what you mean by that? He said, because you light-skinned, man, because the indoctrination is so deep-rooted that we practice division in so many ways that could be visible and subliminal and not even tangible, but done so well, right? So our indoctrination is not just limited to division and separation, but it's also about ideology, what we actually think about each other that's deeply rooted, how we continue to question and allow reasonable doubt. Because have you ever heard presentations about the judicial system, you'll hear shadow of a doubt, reasonable doubt, because if there's a reasonable doubt, then you can't find somebody guilty. But the seed of reasonable doubt can find somebody suspect of being guilty. And that reasonable doubt is something that we experience regularly. We can be going along smoothly and somebody will say something to cast a reasonable doubt that the reason why you're doing it is because it ain't because what you say, it's because you're trying to do it for the money, because you're trying to catch a lot of women, because I see you with a lot of women, because you want property, prestige, and you won't be recognized, because other than what you may really be doing it, but the reasonable doubt makes it comfortable for everybody to say, yeah, oh, man, yeah, I'm here to him. He's just doing it for the money. Or he's doing it because look at all the women he you know, and it's like failing to get to the truth and the root of each one of us. Each of us in this culture have an element of spirituality. The more
if not say one of the more, I'll just say that, one of the more spiritual groups of people on this planet. However, we allow our spirits to be tainted by doubt and discreditation of each other. And that's something I think every individual will have to do a personal inventory and analyze if they allow that to happen or if they practice it, so that we can root it out from ourselves individually, that self-determination, the Kujichagulia principle of rooting out those things that are barriers for us to see each other as both human and valuable. And that's my continual assertion, is that under all of these things that we're experiencing and we're observing, and it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable, man, for a 10-year-old to kill a 10-year-old. It's unbelievable, man. It's unbelievable. But guess what? It's real. It's real. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's not a made-up thing for publicity. A 10-year-old was just killed. This is happening on a continual basis. Children are killing each other. I mean, you got white folks going around killing a whole bunch of people at one time, right? And we would scratch our heads about that, right? It's like, what's up with that? Mental and emotional illness, and maybe some sort of strained retribution toward each other for what they've done to us and the other people and the other countries and all that. And they're saying, look, I'm tired of being one of y'all, and I'm going to take myself out, and I'm going to take as many of y'all out as you, because you're foul. You're foul. I'm declaring y'all foulness, and I'm going to eliminate you, as many of y'all as I can. Maybe that's something. But for our children to be so easily persuaded to think that a life of a person that looks like them doesn't have any value, that reflects precisely on what they think about themselves to me. And I want them to start thinking. That's what we do in school. We get the kids to start thinking. We pose stuff to them where they had to put their phone down and raise their head up and say, oh, damn, I didn't thought about that. So start thinking, because it's not easy remedy for us to do it from top down or from the side. It's coming from the core. We got to get in the house. We on the right street, but we got to get in the house, and we got to get to the table and sit down and do it like we used to do. Sit down, break bread, and talk about how we're going to help heal each other. Because this division is working against us every day.
Ashe, once again, I have to totally agree with you. You know, and like you said, we've come away from togetherness. We come away from caring. You know, nobody cares until it's in their house, until it happens to theirs. You know, other than that, they just care about their four and no more. You know, it wasn't my son, but I'm glad my kids are safe. But how long are they going to be safe? Because it could be the next second or tomorrow that they reach your son, our daughter. You know, we talk about the girls coming up missing, the kids getting killed. All this stuff is running in the same line. It's the same thing. Nobody's caring enough to do something about it. And, you know, like you say, Tim, it's only a few of us, and we could only do so much. But if everybody get on that thought pattern that it's going to take us to help us, because ain't nobody else going to do it. We already know that we're extinct. They want to see us eradicated from this earth, but they don't want to do it themselves. And so they devise a way that we'll do it to each other. They teach these kids, like you say, through the video games, through the music videos, through the music, through the television shows. You know, we can't win for losing. The odds are stacked up against us. You know, And this battle is ours, and it's ours alone, and we got to come together and fight. And it's not just happening here in Sacramento. It's happening all over the United States.
Yes, sir.
And it's reaching into other countries where
yes,
there are
sir.
Blacks. You know, we don't have no love for one another. You know, and that's why I try to talk to these brothers, man, because everybody is chasing a bag. They don't care about nothing but some money. As long as they get some money, I'm all right. You get yours like I got mine. No, it's deeper than that, man. We got to get past that money thing and get to love. It's about love. What good is it to get rich and you ain't got nobody to share it with?
Come on.
A whole lot of rich people on their deathbed, first thing they holler, I give up all this money for a friend. But you don't see it that way till you get that way. You know,
come
money
on,
only going to buy you some stuff. Some stuff that you can't do nothing with but look at and try to high side on somebody else and cause somebody to want to take that stuff from you and cause you to kill somebody to try to keep it or get killed losing it. So you got to think about the big picture. Stuff is the reason why we in this mess now. Stuff.
Come on.
Chasing the bag to get stuff. You chase the bag, you get stuff full of holes, full of lead for stuff. I'm serious, man. I am literally upset. I am serious. I got to go fishing.
I'm with you too.
I got to go
I'm
fishing because I am upset, man. You know,
I'm with you, brother. I'm with you.
We got to
express myself. I expressed myself from the beginning. I'm upset. And I don't mean to come on here like a hothead, but, man, when a 10-year-old kid killed another 10-year-old kid, and then you got 4, 5, 16, 17, 18-year-olds and died in the last week, and we ain't talking about that like we talking about the war on in Israel and the war in Ukraine, and we got a war, man. But anyway, we got another listener that's on the phone line. We had about 4 or 5 of them, but I couldn't get them on. They hung up real quick. Let's see who this is. Calling from the 650. Who's this?
Oh, hey, how you doing, man? This is Manny Smith, the governor. I just called in. Really, my brother Mark put me on to the show. I really didn't have anything to say. After hearing y'all talk, I do want to say something, though. Because
come on, Manny, say
something. All I really want to say to you is, listen, both of you, don't be upset. It's a new year. Be happy. Be proud. God loves you. And let me let you know this. Don't bring emotion into it. Be strategic. Be upset. That's about it for me right now.
I love that. See, that's what I'm talking about. Brothers inspiring, uplifting, and encouraging other brothers to be better at who they are. Manny, I'm going to take that, man, and sit back and listen to the rest of this show in gratitude, because I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful to be on this radio. I'm grateful to have a guy like you speak out and speak against that what was bothering me, right? And I'm going to tell you, Manny, I went out on these calls. See, I do a CIW work. It's crisis intervention work. And I went out on these calls, right? I didn't make it to the visuals, but I go out on this for support, right? And I go for the aftermath, right? And when you see families of 2 10-year-olds really feeling some type of way, I did get emotional. Not that I'm an emotional person, but after seeing this time and time and time again, and when you get that call, I got a call last night to go. Someone was stabbed a young girl. We still ain't found out the information. They said the girl was out there. We went out there. We went to a couple of hospitals. We didn't find nothing, but the community seen what happened, and I'm saying, okay, well, where's the girl? You see? Where's the girl? Where's her parents? There's a bunch of teenagers and a bunch of kids out here. Where are the parents at? See? And so we as a village, and I say village with a strong V, have to dust ourselves off and get back in this game, man, because they keep saying it takes a village to raise one, right? Well, okay, the village I'm looking at is dysfunctional. And we need to have more round tables. We need to, and just like you have a big party and you want everybody to come in all black and all white, you ought to have a big section where people can come to and talk about how we're going to get up out of this. Now, we got something coming up on the Thursday. I think it's the 13th. Not for sure. I got to check again. But it's the third Thursday of this month, right? We got one this Thursday for the mayor, Dr. Flo running for mayor. We're gonna convene for that. But that ain't the only convene we're going to be doing. Every Thursday, we need to go inside the Obama room and strategize as brothers and sisters. It's just not men. We need our sisters. Our sisters is very strong and holding it down. And so we're going to need everybody to pitch in and find a way to make a way. Oh, y'all didn't hear what I said. I said to find a way to make a way, because we are slipping further and further behind that finish, that starting line, right? I was telling the kids in the Healing Circle last night, we're preparing you to start at the finish, at the starting line. We're preparing you, because without preparation, you are five steps behind your counterpart, who are the Asians, who are the Indians, who are the whoever else. You're five steps behind them. And so our job in this room is to prepare you to start at the starting blocks and give you a fair chance to run this race. And so, man, I'm just going to let y'all know, man, I appreciate Manny, because, man, I'm telling you, I was in my feelings after I didn't talk to a couple of mamas, and it was over a bike race and something small, and you're a 10-year-old, got that mad? Come on now. That means the parenting is not there. And I hate to say that, but it's not. It's not. You're not talking to your child. You're not giving them the love they need, the understanding they need. And we're going to have to do that. All right? With that, I'm going to pass that mic.
I say. You know, that's something that's been taught to that child, to act out in that manner. You know, we wonder sometimes why life is like it is. You know, we didn't ask for this. We was forced into this lifestyle. And the thing about it is, like I said earlier, we've grown comfortable. We've gotten too comfortable. We got so comfortable where nobody else matters. Like I said, only thing matters is that I get this bag. I get some money. You see, it's about how much money you got, how much bling bling you got, how many rides you got, you know. And we got to get back. We got to get away from that. And like I said, we got to build a village. We don't even have a village. We got to build one. You know, we got a bunch of people out here that look like us, but they don't think like us. They don't think about the future. They don't think about the present. All they think about is themselves, what they could do. And then not only that, these kids got that mindset, these gangbangers, they got the mindset that we're going to put Sacramento on the map. They look at all these other cities. Oh, they got the highest crime rate. We're going to beat them this year. And I've literally heard them say that. You know, every black city, well, not black city, but every black neighborhood has a high crime rate because we're killing each other. And like I say, we keep doing it, man. Ain't going to be nothing left pretty soon. Nothing but us old folks, or as he calls us, old heads. You know, the churches need to get out and do more. And I think that's one of the places where we're going to have to start going is to the churches. Go sit in when they have testimony service. Get up there and just tell them, oh, I don't have a testimony, but I got some I need y'all to hear. Get out the church. The people is in the street that need help. You didn't help these people for 20, 30 years, and they're still not doing what God said do. Only thing they do is show up to church and give them that money. And it's time for a change, man. We got to do something. And I'm like I say, I can't sit still no longer because I have grandkids
and I want to see my great-grandkids, and I want to see them be able to walk the streets or ride their bikes and not have to worry about somebody shooting them. Because if somebody, if another kid will kill a kid over a bicycle race, just imagine what's going on with these kids in their school competitions, basketball games, football games. Because when I was coming up, a lot of guys in high school, a lot of the good football players, guys were slipping the Mickeys. They're slipping some shirt, PCP, or heroin or something, and now they're slipping them meth just so they can't perform no more. So, you know, it's a lot. It's a lot that we have to put in the thought. We got to put thought into it and get this ball rolling. And I'm with you for it going down there, going downtown. I think a whole lot of things need to be taken up downtown, right there on the courthouse line, or the city capitol line, just like the rest of them do. Get out there and protest. We got to get out there and do sit-ins and shut-ins or something. But we got to make a change. I digress.
And so we had about two or three callers call in, raise their hand. I didn't get to them, and they hung up. And if you are listening from a device and you calling in, just give us a moment to allow the person that's speaking to speak, and we'll get right to you. I will start going to the queue, which will take me off air and you off air so I can find out what you would like to do, listen or talk, right? It is the Wise Words of One Gone Show on Blog Talk Radio. The call-in number is 515-605-9861. That's 515-605-9861. And again, if you'd like to say something, push the number 1, and it'll allow us to see that you have a question for the panel. With that being said, Marvell. You on mute? Let's go to commercial.
Testing, 1, 2, 3. What's up with it? Attention sack artists. You trying to get your music played? R&B, jazz, hip-hop, and comedy. Spoken word as well. Send your MP3 tracks to DJ1Gone at yahoo.com. That's DJONEGONE at yahoo.com. Make sure you give a call to 347-205-9722. Or log on to blogtalkradio.com.
Holla at my homeboy Kenny Ken at Quick Fast Mobile Glass.
Let Ken fix it. Let Ken fix it.
Holla at my homeboy owner Kenny Ken. Let Ken fix it before you get the ticket. All your auto glass needs. Fix it that chip, or maybe, you know, you may need another windshield up in there. Kenny Ken got you.
Peace and blessings, King. Hooked on Fishing and Not on Violence presents Brothers Healing Together.
Brothers Healing Together.
Join us every Wednesday night from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. 2251 Florin Road, Sacramento, California, inside the Obama Room. The Men's Healing Circle is a place where men uplift, encourage, and inspire each other to be better through personal testimony, dialogue, self-reflection, self-improvement, and positive affirmation. Again, that's 2251 Florin Road, Sacramento, California, in the Obama Room. Come out and pledge to greatness with your fellow brother.
Yes, sir. The Men's Healing Circle will be in effect tonight. Tonight is a good night to be there at 2251 Florin Road, inside the Obama Room in South Sacramento, California. Man, it's a beautiful show that we have going on. Again, if you're calling in at the 515-605-9861, that's 515-605-9861. please allow us the time to connect with you so we can see what you have to offer in this dialogue that we have daily. Without further ado, I'm going to go open up the phone lines to our host and see what's going on. Marvell?
Yes, sir. I think I had my, I just noticed I was muted for some, I guess I muted myself for some reason, and I didn't get a chance to complete. I had started to say something and I didn't complete it, and that was my mistake. But I want to propose that although the good advice about calming down and gathering yourself and not allowing emotion to rule the next decision, I appreciate that. Yet, I'm not going to downplay the power of what is known as righteous indignation, because that's an emotionally driven force that makes things better. Because if you're a righteous person, which the guys that are calling in have proven themselves to me to be, when they have something that's bothering them to the point to where they're emotionally invested, well, I'm going to attempt to steer them toward the positive action and reinforcement that's going to bring a remedy to whatever it is that's bothering them. So it's a catch-22. We have to be composed. Oh, yeah, I'm not going to deny that anger and resentment toward a system or toward a situation doesn't exist. And then I'm not going to discourage someone from expressing it. Well, yet I'll steer them toward what it is with the righteous. Is their indignation that moves them to take action. So I understand, because see, you know, I've been, you know, privy to the frustrations and the causes for frustrations for my brother Tim Poole, because he is invested in the betterment of our people, and he demonstrates that on a daily basis. So I'm going to urge him to do what Manny suggests, which is to stand back and not allow it to whittle away at your intent. Yet I understand that energy, if redirected, can bring about positive results. I want to talk about the socialization of drug usage. And I think it ties in with not the children, not the 10-year-olds. I don't suspect them of actually using drugs, but I suspect them of being aware of them and anesthetized to the potential effect that they're going to have, or preparing themselves mentally to use them, because we ain't doing nothing but a bunch of drug commercials. We got dope commercials on TV talking about, oh, well, if you're feeling like this, I can get you to feel like that. Now, the side effects might be, you know, you might spit up, cough up, throw up, or you might die. But guess what? If you don't, this is what you got coming. And then you got people walking down the street smoking marijuana and the kids smelling it. That's a commercial for marijuana. So we got this culture and this society that has kind of like socialized drug usage. And I'm wondering, what impact does that have, or what projection in the minds of the youth does that have for what their future looks like? Is that they're graduating, when they get older, they'll be graduating to the right to get high off of something. So I don't know if it's a stretch or not to tie in what they go through with the video games and the parents who prefer the video games to occupy their children rather than them, because maybe they don't have much to offer to compete with it. So they say, okay, I can't compete with that, so go ahead on. I'll drop you off. Because, see, I was thinking this earlier when Tim was saying about how parents come and drop the kids off, and then they only come to pick them up. And I think in the mind of the parent, they're doing all they need to do because they're putting their child in the realm of something that the child likes to do. So I'm just helping them do what they like to do. And then when they get through, I'll pick them up. They're not thinking about the what spiritual encouragement and emotional encouragement that the child may get with you being present, observing them. They're just thinking that they're giving, I'm giving you, once again, I gave you a phone. You want a phone, I gave you a phone. You want to play, you play basketball, I dropped you off, and I picked you up. What's up? So the emotional detachment that's occurring right now is more than most disturbing to me, the emotional and spiritual detachment. Because when we work with these kids in school, we do what we call the wheel. It's each child stands up, or each young person, let me stop that child. Each youth stands up and announces their name, announces their age, announces their school, and announces what day what kind of day they're having. And though we do this ritualistically, they're still very shy and sheepish about the projecting their voice and declaring the power of it. We struggle to get them. We have to hold it. No, man, come on. You've been doing this. Talk to me, and I'll go on the other side of the room. I say, now holler at me. Because you have to understand the power of your voice. You have to understand the power of your being, that you have something that has power that you can unleash anytime rather than always pulling on someone else's power through a computer. And I think a lot of this football stuff is about venting anger, because these kids getting out there and they're putting some cold hits on each other. I think I don't know how healthy it is, but I know how thorough it is, because they're doing some thorough hitting out there with them young kids, learning the game and practicing venting, I guess, the anger that they have. So it's you know, the depth of, so I hope that I am that one that while I'm listening, I'm getting more depth out of what's being put to the table. Because we can talk about the what, but we have to be able to talk about the why and then the how to redress or address it. So that'll be me, and y'all look for me to do that, because I'm always thinking. See, here's Tim is the demonstrator in our crew. Mark is the prophetess. He does the prophecies, and I do the analysis. And I think that's a working system for us, because between the three of us, we're gonna come up with something. And we're hoping that the listeners are reckoning with that or recognizing that. And if you want to emulate that, we appreciate that. But yet, if you want to pour into what we're doing, we would appreciate that as well. Well, your listening is important to urge your action somewhere along the line. And we're trusting that it's going to occur. We're trusting that you're going to not only call in, but pour in. We're trusting that. Because if not, I'm wondering if you're really getting anything out of this. And I don't want to ponder that. I don't want to say, hey, you know, they just got us on because they at work and they want a distraction from the noise of the machinery or something that I don't know, whatever. But the thing that I really would like to think is that you're finding a way to fit in and be a puzzle piece to make us whole in this country again. Because we're wounded, we're seeking healing, we're seeking to be made whole.
And if we have to, if we have to petition somebody else to give us what we need, we'll do that. And if we have to hold each other accountable to that, we'll do that too. Ashe.
Ashe.
We have another listener. We have another listener. I just want to give them a chance to speak and say the name. We have a listener from 951. 951. Hello.
Hello. Good morning, people. I just joined in. I'm a partner from Mark. Just my name, Double R. I'm just here listening today, seeing what's going on. God bless y'all. Happy New Year. I yield back.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Hey, thank so you. Look. It is the Wise Words of One Girl Show, and the topic is real tough right now, right? Because it's what's going on Wednesday. And so, you know, the rest of the world and the rest of the news is talking about what's happening across the water with Israel, the migration of people coming in through Mexico at an all-time high, the war in Ukraine. We talking about everything but what happened to Pookie last night, a little Ray Ray yesterday. We talking about everything that we cannot control. But in our hood, we can control some of these things, man, if not all of it. We just got to sit down and talk as people, man, and uplift each other, encourage each other, and inspire each other to be the best we can be. And that sounds simple, but it's not happening. Mark, I see that, you know, you've been telling a lot of folks to come on this radio podcast, and that's a beautiful thing, Mark, because the more the merrier. The more people we can get to sit at the table, whether it's on this radio, whether it's in the Obama room, whether it's down at the city hall, the more that come together with like mind, with a mission to push forward and change in some of the situations that we're faced with, the better times is going to be, because right now we're in the fourth quarter, the ninth inning. We ain't got one shot that's going to win the game. We don't have a 3-pointer that's going to win the game. We got to come together, man, and run a few plays to get a change.
I say. And we need a Hail Mary. That's what we need. Yeah, that brother, Double R, he's I like for Marvell to get in touch with him. He's deep into the reparations thing. And the boy's a great speaker. I mean, he's a great speaker, but his way of speaking up, he is kind of forcefully. And, I mean, he gets his word across. He was down at the reparations here in Sacramento, and, I mean, he let them have it. He let them have it. But, like I say, I encourage you guys to, whoever you are, wherever you are, to reach out to others and let them know what's going on, what we talk about, because you can start right where you are. And once we get enough people starting where they are, we'll have this thing licked, man. We'll have it licked. But we just need somebody from every neighborhood, every neck of the woods, just from every city, country, state, town, to speak out and speak up. And we can control, we can not control, but we can lower the deficit, because we're dying fast. I mean, real fast. When 10-year-olds are going, man, those kids' lives barely just begun. It ain't even really begun yet. They're still playing, but they're playing the wrong way. They're playing a deadly game, a Russian roulette. So I encourage you guys to reach out and just touch somebody, you know, let others know that we're on the air and we're trying to make a difference. And we have different subjects every day. And I just encourage you guys to just let somebody know about it. I digress.
Ashe. So we'll take a moment. We'll come right back. Hopefully you can tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend that we right here on Blog Talk Radio every morning, Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, right here, making it possible for everyone to have a voice, because a lot of people say, well, I'm saying something, but ain't nobody listening. Well, guess what? We listening. And we want to put something together with you to make change right in our area. We don't have to go far to look for what we're looking for. It's right next door. It's down the street. It's on the other side of town. But it's not that far from you. Let's make a change. But change starts with self. With that being said, I'm going to go to a commercial and we'll be right back.
Hooked on Fishing and Not on Violence presents Youth Healing Circle every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m.
Youth Healing Together.
2251 Florin Road, Sacramento, California. Inside of Room 67. Our Youth Healing Circle is a forum where we dive into discussions about drugs, bullying, school, and life skills. We provide a safe space and inform our youth
that sometimes it is okay to not be okay.
During our Youth Healing Circle, our youth may hear from other youth as well as experienced adults how to problem solve and navigate unforeseen complexities that we all run into in life. 2251 Florin Road, Sacramento, California. That's Room 67 every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. For more information, text or call 916-889-0105. Let's heal together.
Hey, man, you got your fishing pole?
Got my fishing pole?
Yeah, man, we going fishing.
Man, I ain't going no fishing, man. I got this strap. These streets is hot.
Hey, man, you need to call Hooked on Fishing, Not on Violence at 916-889-0105. Hooked on Fishing, Not on Violence. It's brought to you by Wise Words with One Gon' Show, and We Can Work It Out In. Hooked on Fishing and Not on Violence is taking the guns out of our kids' hands and putting a rod and reel in them. We are located at 2251 Florin Road in South Sacramento. That's Hooked on Fishing, Not on Violence. Join the crew and save a kid. You know how we do.
Yes, sir. Hooked on Fishing, Not on Violence bring to you game night on Thursday night. So tomorrow night, man, I don't even want the kids. So the kids did the first 6 months. Now it's time to get the brothers in there to play dominoes, spades, pinochle, and sit and have a conversation while we playing these games, right? Game night, tomorrow night. Well, it won't be tomorrow night because we got the Dr. Flo that's going to be there. But we got to start getting our game night back so brothers can come from all over the city and be able to have a dialogue to talk about while they're playing their favorite game. Without further ado, I got the host of the most, Mr. Marvell Wilson, for you. Marvell?
Yes, sir. The laws of attraction is what we would do well to set in motion. So we want the young people to aspire to being like, at least being thinking righteously and moving in a direction that's collective. And I think it's important for them to see us demonstrating that. Because I noticed that when we're in session in the men's healing group, it's in the Obama room, 2251 Florin Road in Sacramento, California, the south side. It's right off the entrance. So you have glass door entrance. And then when you come in, immediately to your left, there's a glass window where you can look in and see us in session. And I've watched how the youth walk by with a curiosity about what's going on in there, because they see a bunch of men in there seemingly enjoying each other's company, seemingly a part of something that's worth something. And that type of law is what is important, I think, for us to set in motion. So the idea about us doing the circles outside so that we could be seen, I think, is very powerful, because the law of demonstration is greater even than the spoken word. So we have to let them see us enjoying each other so that they can aspire to becoming like us in that regard. Because I've noticed that the young people don't seem to want to be like us. They struggle to make sure that they don't find themselves acting like we do, because if we look at our presentation, it appears as though we struggle to be servants, and that we struggle to appease, and that we struggle to get along with our children rather than guiding and leading and parenting our children. So we cave in on the phones, we cave in on the tennis shoes, we cave in on the uniforms, we cave in on the hairdos, we cave in on a whole bunch of stuff to appease them so that they can feel okay in their environment. But they don't want to be like us because they don't want to be serving nobody when they get grown. Like, oh, you. Okay, yeah, I'm glad you're doing it for me, but I don't plan on doing it for nobody else. Because you see when these young kids have kids themselves, they put a phone in their hand and they're all about their business. They let the child be stimulated and groomed and taught by everything on the internet. Do you know that fourth and fifth graders are looking at porn on their phones in school? That's how deep that is. So we have an inside-out job. And one of the ways that I think that we can impact is to have the kids looking at us, seeing us enjoying being around each other so that they can get back into the trend of socialization for their stimulation. Because right now it's kind of dismal. The disconnect is so distinct to me. And so when Marx proposed that we smile at the kids, you know, find a way to strike a conversation and, you know, allow the kids to get sort of interpersonal with us as we encounter them, that's a practiced behavior. And what I've observed is that a lot of parents are seemingly, and I'm going to say the word, afraid of their children. Not afraid of them or what they're going to do to them, but afraid of how they're going to react to something that they say so they don't say it. How they're going to react to some boundary that they place on them so that they don't place the boundary. How's a kid going to cuss you out about a phone that you're paying for? But they do. You want to get in a fight with your kid? Take their phone. And then it might get to a 911 if you don't give it back, because they're gonna perform about that phone. So we'll do well to keep on being visible and being social and being spiritual in our demonstration so they can see what it looks like to be a collective body that's enjoying each other's company. So it's beautiful what we're doing at the African market. And I think it's smart to funnel in as many people to observe us in action as we possibly can so that they can get back into the spirit of socialization that is the core of our hearts and our wholesomeness on this planet. Because that's who we are. We are the wholesome of the people, the spiritual of the people. I say among, I'm not going to say the soul, because I don't want to create that controversy. But just examine it yourself, and you determine that we are in the top 2-3 of the most spiritual, most wholesome, most trusting, most, and here's the word, most patriotic in this country. They talk about patriots all the time. We are the true patriots in this country. We fight for this country. We harvest to make this country great. We tolerate all kinds of indiscretions and all types of discriminations. We still stand and represent this country. So we are the real patriots, if you want to say a word. So I just want to plant the seed of recognition that we should faint not to think that we are not of value, that we should faint not to think that we don't have a say or that we don't have a place in this strata that we can call our own. We just need to unite to claim it. Ashe.
Well, I like what you said there, my brother.
Great listener. I'm a great listener, man. And this is Double R once again in California. I'm a starter of the 1619 Reparations Party. Like Brother Mark said, I was following the reparations movement for about a year, for the last year. I closed on them. When I closed on them, I said, America, we tired of your BS. I said, it's time for a divorce. You committed the first hate crime against us when you snatched us from Africa. When you brought us here, you raped our men, women, and kids. You killed us. You hung us. You did all these things to us, so you're guilty. I said, and when it's time for a divorce. And what do you get in divorce? You get half the money, half the land. You get alimony, you get child support. You get attorney fees, you get all that. I told her we want all that. You got all this land out here. You ain't gave us an acre. You ain't gave us nothing. You know what I'm saying? So, black people, y'all got to understand, watch these folks as they come up on this election year. I told them no reparations in 2023, no vote in 2024. Why we keep voting on these clowns? What are we voting on these clowns for? Obama didn't give us nothing. Kamala ain't gave us nothing. She was talking about reparations before she got in there. She ain't said nothing about reparations. Said about the last month, last year or something, or 2 months when the year was going. You know what I'm saying? Trying to get the women vote again. That's how they won. The Democrats took states that was never Democratic in decades because of the black women vote, how powerful that was. But check this out. Put your name on that ballot and vote for yourself if you believe in reparations. That's how we're going to do. Why are we wasting our vote on these crackers? America ain't going to never do nothing for us. We keep looking for a handout with them. We just got to say, check this out. Don't use our vote. Use us as no pawns no more. You know, and another thing, they genociding us. You think that we lock us up and it's about slavery? No. My brother was 55 years old when he caught a 33-year-old case, manslaughter case. They gave him 27 to life. That case only supposed to go 3 to 5 years because they brought up gangbanging. And that's another thing with us. We got to get with our young black people. Stop this damn gangbanging. Stop all this rap about gangs and dope and all this and that. Talk about some positive things. Talk about, you know, reparations and you know, black people stick together, you know, unity and all that. That's what we need. That's what we got to put in our youngsters' head. You know, we need more videos on positive movements, you know. But like I said, we got to stop voting on these crackers and these black faces, you know, all these black faces. Reginald Dorn Sawyer, he's one of our councilmen here in California, in L.A. He told me he going to crown and talking about, oh, yeah, we closed 2 prisons down. I came to the next meeting. I said, check this out. The first going to go last and the last going to go first. Give us them prisons that you closed down. And give us our political prisons. Give us our prisons of war. Give us our prisons of all the stuff that y'all did to us. And let us rehabilitate us ourselves. We get our own black staff. And we can go one-on-one agape love to them. And we can get them out that prison. Matter of fact, I want to take them prisons. And I want to build a BCU black college on other side with a bridge going to the other side. So we can teach them how to learn and get their head right. Give us another 400 acres around there so we can make them be able to do something with their hands so we can put them in back into our community because we want our own sovereign society. I don't want to live with these crackers no more. Why we keep living by them? I live by them now. I've been living by them for 27 years. I'm a black owner. I'm a black business owner. I've been doing hair for 27 years. My shop, I got an NAACP award about 15 years ago, whatever. That shit can flush that shit down the toilet because it ain't about black people. NAACP awards about everybody but black. You know what I'm saying? Every time they get the money. We don't get none of that damn money. But what I'm saying is that this. They need to give us them prisons. They need to give us our land. They need to give us our air rights, our water rights. You know what I'm saying? Our money. I said, check this out. Well, I got an RV. I said, give everybody an RV. You won't give us no house. Give us an RV and a gas car. Get a gas car so we can put on our own land and we can start building our own damn self and stop looking for these crackers to put a hand out. You know what I'm saying? We don't need them. We don't need them. But what I think is that this, we got to get our prisoners out of there. They killing them. They killing. You go in there, you checking in, but you ain't checking out. My brother went in there. My other brother, middle brother, went in there. He got found with a clip in his pocket. Got a 10-year sentence. Before he left and caught the chain to go to prison, he got a staph infection and died in there. You feel me? Now my other brother got 27 life. That's 55. Now he's 59. He ain't getting out of there. Now what the hell are we doing at these people for? Look how they doing as soon as we get to the system. We need our own court system. We need, if the law said we're supposed to have jurors and everybody of our race, of our peers. Every time we go in there, we got crackers here. Every time we go in there, we paying the white folks and shit. You know, lawyers and all this stuff like this. You know what I'm saying? We got to come together, black people, because this shit right here is crazy. And it's election year right here. We're going to hit them over here with this. Because we don't need to vote for them. Remove your vote from them. Put your name down there. Put your mama name. Put your dead relative that was a slave down there and vote for them. I yield back.
Ashe, I told you that brother was on fire. And, you know, we got to keep this fire going. We can't allow it to die out. Because we have, like I said, we have too much to look forward to, but we can't see no further than our hand because it's cluttered by the bag, by all this other mess that they're advertising. We do have to come together on one accord, and we have to stand for something and stop falling for any and everything. I digress.
So right now I'm writing up vision and purpose and goals for a project known as, I want to call it, it's right now is Black United Community Advocacy, right? I'm urging it to be advocacy for Black United Community. But the author wants United Community, Black and United to be in there because she's from another country, and she came here and took advantage of all of the things that avail themselves to a person coming here fresh, and she's from an African country. So she's looking at being a black person coming in here, getting a head start, taking off, and she's very thorough. So she's having a lot of good experiences as a result of that. But then she stopped to ask the question, why is it that I'm able to come in here and experience all of these benefits, and the people that's been here are not getting them as well? So now she's putting her energy toward reckoning that. And I'm a part of that structure. So it's an effort to do what everybody's proposing that we do, that we become autonomous, right? That we learn how to redirect our talents, our energies, our skills, and our abilities toward being a collective that distributes and manufactures and is self-sustaining in this country. So, as I said, whenever we have a discussion and whenever we hear someone who has some new information or a new concept that is going to get us closer to our goal, we're taking notes, my brother. We're taking notes, and we're going to attempt to structure something that resembles, if not duplicates, what our ideal goal is, and that is for us to be respected and treated as we are. We are the real patriots of this country. We are the ones who made this country great. We are the ones who contributed. I have 74 inventions,
32 of them are essential for a civilization to maintain itself. 34 of them. And black men and women were the creators of these inventions. So we are the hub that makes this thing, that made this thing get going, and for the most part, keeping it going, because we're the most targeted consumer in this country. Oh, when you mention about Asians and you mention about the Arabs and even the Hispanic community, you know, in Sacramento, you got the Hispanics. They have all their stands set up. Before, you couldn't do it. I tried to do it, just set up a stand to sell my wares, and people came and asked me to leave. But for some reason, it's okay for the Hispanics to set up these food stands. Every 2 miles, you see one, and they're doing quite well selling to all ethnics. Whereas we got soul food restaurants, and somebody might go in there as a novelty to check it out, but there's no regular customer base of Asians or Hispanics or Caucasians buying at soul food restaurants. So we're the consumer deemed to be hitherto until we establish ourselves as autonomous and capable of being distributors and manufacturers, which we are. We just have to demonstrate it. That's another part of the unity. Unity for spiritual content's sake is good, yet unity for our stability and our respect in commerce is equally as good and probably more essential when it comes to others looking at us. Because I talked the other day about how I think somebody sees when they look at us with our pants hanging off our butt, walking down the street with pajamas and house shoes on, like everything is leisure, like you live outside. And the way we conduct ourselves through our music and through our expressions of each other, I'm trying to look at that through the lens of someone looking at us, and they're saying, oh, shoot, I don't care about working them over. I don't care about coming in their community selling them high-priced, expired goods. I don't care about that, because look at them. They don't care about that either. They're susceptible to whatever we put down, because they sleep on each other and themselves. So the inside-out job is still the premise here. So that's why we work in the communities to establish workshops with the Men Accountable Project that we're going to unleash in 2 or 3 weeks, and then start having these workshops talking about these issues and getting, you know, consensus, getting surveys to find out what people think about it and what we can do about it. Because the intricacy and the details and the footwork starts grassroots. You know, we have an overview about what we want to see. However, we have to break it down to get to where we're getting people to understand the vision.
Brother Marvell.
Sir.
I got another listener on, but before I put the next listener to speak, I want to say this. I heard you mention a couple of groups that are together, right, that you're a part of. I know you're part of the BBOA. I know you're a part of Zion's group. I know you're a part of the Men Accountable Project. I know you're a part of a few others. But why is it that you are a part of four different organizations and they don't meet at all? That's where I see the problem. When you said that, man, I wrote that down just as fast as I could hear you call out some of these, like the lady Zion that came from Africa, and she has a good insight on how to move the needle, but you in three other networks or groups, and they don't know about that. That concerns me when I hear that. That concerns me, and you, my big brother, my advisor, but to hear that, that's a big disconnect in itself. That means there's a bunch of silos trying to do this work that needs unity in which we speak of. And so it is not It is not your fault. It ain't. I'm just speaking to you because you just said that, and something dawned upon me when I heard you say that. I said, well, shoot, he done named out a couple of groups, and none of them have ever met each other. What the dog bite is going on? Listener, you're calling from the 916. Go ahead and say your name, state your claim, and get into this dialogue. We talking about what's going on Wednesday. What's going on, caller? 916-268. Hello. That look like Brother Bill Williams.
Can you hear me?
William? I can't
yes,
now,
sir.
But you got off mute.
Yeah.
Come on with it.
I remember what you
I'll
said about the background noise yesterday.
Okay.
Yes, sir. I'm
Come
doing well
it.
And yourself?
I'm
well,
trying to find out who I'm talking to.
Well, the first thing I would like to say is I love what I'm hearing because this sounds very progressive, and I love that we're mature enough to be able to accept constructive criticism here because without that, there is no progress nor correction in our journey, right? We need sometimes a course correction in our travels here. And one of those is definitely for me, whenever I do see the disconnects between persons, organizations, two things come to mind. First, I have to continue to move on and find ways to be able to network with individuals, whether they're piecemeal in the organization or just outside of them, to do the job that needs to be done. Because sometimes I find that a lot of the life skills that we're teaching to the community, we're not necessarily practicing ourselves. And so I think workshops like we're talking about are so important for more than just facilitating groups for those in the community that are in need. I think there needs to be workshops done for us that are the professionals doing the work in the community. And this is what I was speaking about yesterday about the seminars. There needs to be seminars for the professionals, or for those that are doing the work in the field so that we can sharpen and hone our skills so that we can be a better tool and be better equipped to provide the service to the community, because we have to model the behavior that we want to see in others. So I believe that, one, we definitely have to continue on with the progress in spite of some of the resistance in one way or another, because we have to be professional in our approach towards satisfying our objectives or goals. And number two, workshops or seminars done for the professionals helps us to be able to increase our life skills and to model better behavior for those that we are modeling for in the community. Thank you.
Okay, here's a moreover to what was just presented. The moreover is that when we as professionals, see, when Tim asked about the several organizations that I'm affiliated with, the one organization that creates a consortium is the Advocacy for Black United Communities, because that'll be a 501c4 sponsored effort that can use all of the pools and all of the draws that that are available to work directly with communities, and then we're going to work with all businesses. Businesses are going to, I call it a consortium of all black businesses working in tandem to create a coffer for the enhancement of our ability to become manufacturers, purchase land, and purchase and use the 501c banner to be able to acquire buildings that are not in use for a meager price, that we can turn them into programs and turn them into schools, do the same thing that's being prescribed by the other brother Smith that was talking about what we can do if we had the facility. But the seminars and the workshops for us professionals or us who are dedicated would be to create a jargon, right? That we're all in one accord, that we can be heard. Anytime you see one of us, you're going to hear the same thing, right? Because we're going to permeate the atmosphere with with our goal and with our vision, and everybody's saying the same thing. And the reason why I propose this as a way to do this is because I've watched in politics, I've watched the minority, the Republican Party as a minority, still be able to have power and influence because they all say the same thing. Every time they on the air, they say the same thing. And it has that subliminal effect. When everybody's saying the same thing, then it must be true. If everybody's saying the same thing, I guess that's the interpretation mentally. But in our culture, if we create that jargon, we create those catchy little sayings, or we create whatever it is, the little phraseology that we create. If everybody, we get seminars and everybody is practicing delivering that same theme, it might not be the same words, but the same theme in our communities, I think it will have that effect that we're desiring. So the seminars and the workshops are becoming more essential in our planning.
I agree. I can only simply agree and hope that I think the acronym here for that is BUC. Right, that it actually moves on quicker than the need demands, because right now the need is so dire that tomorrow's meeting I expect to be pretty live and active, depending on who, of course, participates, because we're talking about a lot of pieces in our infrastructure, so far as our social network is concerned, that are in need of first coming together, coming to a mutual agreement, of course, creating that rhetoric that you're talking about, but then most importantly, having a strategy and a plan for making sure this is something that we both can develop as a format for a blueprint for what we are going to be doing on a continuous basis, and maintaining that, because the maintenance is probably going to be one of the most important things, because people are going to have to be appointed positions, people are going to have to take on responsibilities, we're going to have to be a little more organized about our approach to business, all of that. So I just simply look forward to this and hope that we can do this quicker than the demand that our community requires.
Yeah, this double law. I like to touch on a, it's real heavy here in California. It's about the CRT. CRT is a critical race theory that was denied in our schools from K through 12, which I know is a little bit too tough for them to sit for colleges. But however, we can't even study our own history in our classrooms with our kids, and that's killing the brain. So if we can, I think that the youth is more important to carry this torch. We need to let them know, and maybe we can create some type of the way the internet is, some type of study. You know, like you say, they get on their phones and they look at their porn, or they look at their rap music or something. How about 1 hour a day, 5 to 6? We can teach them our Black history, Black power. I yield back.
Contest. You know, they're always competing in games. You know, they're stimulating their dopamine with the gaming. Well, let's create a format with contests where they'll get awards. That's why I say the advocacy for United Black communities will have coffers that can contribute to such a venture where we'll be able to host things like that and make it worthwhile for them to know certain things and win. It's a win-win for them to have the knowledge and then get an award for acquiring the knowledge. So We can get real creative about that. I agree. Let's focus on how to attract them in their wheelhouse to the information that we are truly convinced is important for them to have.
I see. Black power.
Amen. And so what we're talking about is incentivizing the youth to be inspired to learn about their own history, and more so to connect it with the pre-existing systems, including this current tech age, to advance not only a blueprint but a model for our community in the future. Because when I think about places like Detroit and New York and Los Angeles, et cetera, I think about places that have black and minority upperclassmen and women. Their socioeconomic status is above par, and they have great networks with one another. These are people that you read about in the Fortune 500s, and this is definitely what we need to establish here in Sacramento. We definitely need an upperclassman of black men and women that are a little more unified and a little more prolific in their approaches. I've got to agree 100%.
No doubt. And see now, I think that we can tap into those affluent blacks once we have a model that is effective and progressive toward our cultural values, because I think they're kind of maybe a little hesitant to step out on a like a test model that got some questions about it. Well, what we can do is become unquestionable in our intent and thorough in our application, so that we can appeal to other blacks who have the wherewithal, and we don't have to ask for grants coming from the government or social agencies manned by other people. Yet it's important for us to get a strong foundation, a strong grassroots foundation that has the promise that they won't be disappointed in their return of being philanthropic and being encouraging and giving of what they have to make something happen, and they'll see it happen. So what I do, well, in my mind, what I have in store is once we get, because see, we're at the really planning stages of some very powerful things, and we're talking about it, and we're structuring, and we're pooling our energies and resources mentally right now and spiritually right now, but it's going to be a physical, tangible. And once that's done, we can ask these people who have the wherewithal not to come themselves, not to hear a video, but send somebody they trust to observe what we're doing and report back to them. Yeah, this is legit. All right, if that's legit, what they need. I can hear them saying that. I can feel them saying that. And I trust that's what will happen. And we can go to people who look like us but live like them to pour back into us. That's part of my personal vision.
Amen. I totally agree. And that's where my brother Manny come in. He has this black cohesion thing going. I don't know how far he's come with it. I've asked him for some information on this so I can put before the brothers so we can see something on paper and we can act accordingly towards it. Because, like I say, that's very important that we start something like that, because that way we could fund ourselves. See, because once we take money from them, now they're in control, tell you what you can and what you can't do, what you can and you can't say, how you should carry certain things out. So that's why it's important that we come together as one unit and work together on things. And we can do this all across the nation. Because once it gets started, and like I said, we'll be held to compete with. Because they already have problems competing with us. That's why they keep us divided.
the way that they have kept us divided. Because we have people in high places. We have people with the smarts to counteract anything that they say and do. They're just not coming together. So we got to quit chasing that bag and come after our own.
Amen, Black Power.
Yeah, I want to say that tomorrow when we do show up, I'm hoping that I would like to ask someone if it's possible if they can bring like a board that we can like write on for people to see in the Obama room, like maybe what do you call those the white ones that you can use markers on.
Yeah,
so that people can see what we're discussing, especially if we're going to be discussing blueprints. And then the second thing I wanted to say is I definitely have some blueprints that I would like to share with the two with you, Merv and Tim. I definitely know that we're further along in this discussion, Merville. I'm sorry. I am so sorry. I know I was sharing, and I get those two names confused all the time. But I definitely have no problem with sharing that, and just praying that we are responsible with the information that is shared, because we're further along than we think, and I know that because all of us are having the communications all around the board when it comes to our various networks, but. I'm very in tune with the ones that I have in particular, and I definitely don't mind offering and sharing my networks to this enterprise because of the necessity here. So I definitely, again, look forward to tomorrow because the discussions tomorrow should be, in my opinion, both lively and on the verge of explosive, you know.
Well, I also make a request that we videotape it.
Amen.
Because, like I say, this needs to get out, not just for us, but for all communities all across the nation. You know, like I say, the more the merrier, the bigger the better. We could do this thing. We could do it. So let's get it done.
Make me think about characters like Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck made a fortune with theories that he put on whiteboard, right? They could be a stretch from reality, far-fetched, but he was cagey enough to frame it to where it made enough sense for people to consider. Remember, I spoke earlier about what they call reasonable doubt, right? So if he could eliminate reasonable doubt with his presentation, that's what kept him on the air. So it's the same principle here. Well, that's immediately what I thought about when we started talking about airing and recording our presentations to each other. It jumped in on me that's kind of like the visual aid that we deserve to have in our files. To be able to pull up as needed, right? Not just a willy-nilly just posting everything on Facebook that we do. We could be strategic about what we unleash as if we haven't recorded, because it'll be under whatever category that we're dealing in at the time we could pull up footage. So we're, you know, like, man, I don't know if nobody else is getting that, but I'm moved to greater vision every time we talk about the what, and we start talking about the why and the how to make it different. It just opens up my vision to be able to see that we're going to get this done. And I hope that any listener would be encouraged to entertain that kind of thought process that, oh, okay, well, I'll wait and see, but it looked like they're on the verge of making something happen. And then I'm hoping that the listeners who have that in mind are willing to make a commitment to do whatever is comfortable for them to push it forth, the vision, because that's something that we lack collectively, is a vision. But we're starting to get it now.
So, Brother Marvell, what I hear you saying is very, very crucial. But this is the thing, Brother Marvell. This is the thing. We need, I'm just telling the truth, we need to have this go over to where the world can see that there are still real black men doing real work. Because so many times they have had so many groups and silo groups, and they all got the same interest. They might have a different vision on how to get there, but they all got that same interest on how can we get past this hump. What I'm asking brothers and sisters to do, because we're going to need these sisters, what I'm asking you to do is truly give your all. When you come inside any room I'm in, please give your all. If you have a problem or you don't understand, please be kind enough to talk to one another to get understanding, because that's what's missing in our community, understanding one another. And so there's a lot of work to be done. We got enough workers to get some of this work done, but we all have to bring our best self. And like I said, if we have any differences, we need to talk to one another, because I might not understand. And if you break it down to me, I might get understanding. And with understanding, I may be able to give you my best moving forward and toward the ultimate goal. And so this is not a pilot. You know, the people say, well, this program's a pilot program. This is the real deal. And we have to be real. We cannot no longer fake each other in conversation, in movement. It all has to be understood that we're doing this for a greater cause, not because. And so I need everyone that's listening to understand that when you say you're going to meet, let's greet, probably eat. But let's make sure that we are understanding what we are doing. If we have to break it down to the basic terms and terminology, let's do so. Because we don't want to lose not one soldier because he didn't understand of the plan. With that, I'm going to pass the mic. We got a minute left. I'll close this out, Marvell, because we got a minute and 54 seconds left. Unless y'all want to go an extra 10 minutes, let me know now.
Okay, well, with about 40 seconds, I'd like to share something with you, because I'm here with my mama and I'm leaving today, and it's kind of, you know, it's one of those the bittersweets. I wrote something for her birthday, and I'd like to share it with you, because I think people can subscribe to the same sentiment about their mother or grandmother. It says, Ma, once a year, there's a special day in honor of those like you, who do a job few others would, or quite frankly, even capable to do. To watch you stand time and time again for what seems like a thankless task makes a tribute to you for the things that you do really seem like not too much to ask. So with much respect, I'll make an attempt to convey the credit that's due and to congratulate any fortunate child who has a mother like you.
Amen. My pal.
I say, happy birthday, Mom. Happy birthday.
Powerful.
She made 90?
Yes, sir. She turned 90.
90 years young.
Yeah, and still moving furniture around. When she get tired of seeing the arrangement of furniture, she be downstairs, come back. You leave in the morning, you come back in the afternoon, it's a different arrangement.
Hey y'all, we want to thank y'all for ear hustling with us. You could ear hustle anywhere, but you was right here on Wise Words with One Gone. So we got to get out of this thing. We out.